he's alive!
Hi there, welcome to LassoCast. My name is John Rhodes, and I almost cried two times today watching this episode.
Right.
And I'm joined by...
Saida Rhodes. I also almost cried twice, and I would also like to say I walked past my Christmas stocking today, and it's looking very promising.
And also with us...
I am Kenny Madison. I teared up just once, but it was a big tear up. Mm-hmm. And I also walk by my Christmas stocking and feel a great deal of anxiety because both giving gifts and receiving gifts fills me with a tremendous amount of anxiousness. And joining us on this episode, my personal friend, actor, improviser, teacher, lover, storyteller. What other descriptors, Paul?
I'm blushing right now at those. So thank you. Thank you for those.
Award-winning storyteller.
Woo.
Bronze god.
Woo.
Whenever the model on which Michelangelo based David.
I'm very old. It's true. It's very true. That's what he's trying to say. Be polite.
Paul Normandin, welcome to the LassoCast.
Thank you so much. I am very excited to be here. I love the show. And as you know, Kenny, I love you. And I'm looking forward to loving John and Cy. So this should be great.
Hey, right back at you.
Oh, man. John and Cy, they're so great. They're just delightful.
Kenny, that's so kind, as are you.
We have a lot to live up to. With Paul, from the way you just described him.
Yeah,
a lot of accolades there.
Like, so Paul's at number one, and then you guys are at like a distant 50, 60.
Sure. I'll take that.
Sure.
I feel like you know a lot of people, and I'll take that.
Oh, really? Wow. Thank you.
Yeah.
If I'm at number one, I know how many people you know, too. That's scary.
Yeah, which is also weird, because you know exactly the number of people that I know.
What is it? Spell it.
It's got to be 2,000.
Oof.
Yeah, I know 2,000 people, exactly.
On the nose?
Yeah.
Wow.
You
cap it,
you like, if you met another person, you'd have to forget somebody else?
I mean, I don't really remember.
Perfect. I know, I think 63 people, and Kenny, I'd probably put you at like number 12.
Wow.
Pretty solid.
Wow.
Well, thank you.
And size my number one.
Oh, thanks. That's a great answer. I don't know how many people I know. How do you guys know this?
Take a stab. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Oof.
It yeah, let's for us. Instead of talking about Ted Lasso, let's just list all the people that we know.
Yeah. We'll get to this Paul. Very special episode of Ted Lasso in a minute.
Yeah, but first.
I want to know how many people Cy knows.
Yeah.
I'm going to say actively... You know, let's say 82, unactively 170.
That's pretty good.
That's such a well thought out answer.
I was in a sorority, so at any given time, there's just a lot of people around, but I don't actively know those people anymore.
Certainly.
Sure. And Paul, predating Michelangelo, you must know a lot of people.
A lot of them have passed. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah. Understandable. A lot of them.
Yeah, I've outlived a lot of people. It's kind of sad.
So, Paul, you're a fan of Ted Lasso?
I am. I've watched it completely all the way through, going on 3 times now.
Oh, wow.
Super fan. What is it about the show that draws you back to watch it again?
Part of it is there's a lot of callbacks. There's a lot of nerd in it. That's one. That's like one layer. Second layer is he's the character the Simpsons tried to make with the neighbor. That was
Ned Flanders.
It's a Ned Flanders, but he's real and he's not a joke. He has a plan and an idea, and he can help people if they just let him. And I love that about him. And then there's the little bit, and Kenny mentioned this earlier. He didn't realize it. Where I am Nate, I think of myself as Nate.
Go on.
I want to be Ted.
Yeah. I think that's who I identify with most as well.
You know, I'll whisper in somebody's ear what the right answer is, but I can't say it out loud for fear and embarrassment.
Yeah. Right. And are you like glad to let other people take credit for that whisper?
I spent a career doing that. Mm. I was very happy to be that guy.
Are you still chasing the Ted Lasso?
About 2 years ago, I retired. I left my gig. I'd worked for the feds. I had worked for the state. I'd accumulated enough years. I said, you know what? I'm going to retire young. And I had this crazy idea that I was going to be a writer. And over the last 2 years, I have struggled, but I got published in the Austin American Statesman the other day. It was really small and nothing.
Paul,
congrats.
Hey, that's awesome.
That's huge.
And I submitted a written version of a story to a show the other day, and it got accepted, and I performed it there.
Outstanding. Oh,
wow. And it's a big deal. I think, Kenny, you can hear in Kenny's voice, it was a big deal for me.
Yeah. I mean, Paul's a big deal.
I'm big.
Paul, is there anything else you want to say about Ted Lasso?
Ted has some really great management tools that I spent the last years of my career trying to help other managers learn about and understand as not just good ideas and not the soft tools of management, but actually neuroscience-based ideas about helping people do their best.
Neuroscience? What do you mean by that?
I was working with a team out of UT who used concepts from neuroscience to apply to management training and management theory. And so it was pretty cutting edge. But for me, it was very exciting. And I brought my enthusiasm to it because I didn't have any knowledge of the subject matter.
So what you're saying is that the Ted Lasso School of Management is backed up by neuroscience. Like it's biologically good for you.
It is biologically good for you to be challenged where you are, to be pushed to do as well as you can, but also to appreciate where you are. There's a really great moment in Ted Lasso where he looks at Jamie Tart and says, I don't think you know how healthy that is.
Yeah.
It was really amazing.
So I'm just waiting for like a thesis paper to be published on Ted Lasso.
I mean, there's just I could read every single article about this show. There's so much to unpack, and because it's on Apple TV Plus, just not many folks are talking about it.
Yeah, not yet.
Yeah, not yet. Because if there's anything that's going to get people to sign up for Apple TV Plus, it's this show for sure.
You know, it's weird. I was thinking today, rewatching this episode. Even when you're in Apple TV Plus, you have to like dig through it to find Ted Lasso. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how it's not the number one banner in the app.
What is the number one banner?
I think it's Wolf Walkers right now, which is, I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard it's great.
Sure.
But if you go to like comedy TV shows, it's like a show called Trying. A couple other shows I haven't watched, Central Park. And then you scroll a few more and then finally you see Ted Lasso.
Well, that's probably just based off of how many people are actually clicking on it. But it's interesting. Like Apple TV's UI isn't great. Well, yeah, I'm going to say it. It's not great. So I think
there goes our sponsorship chances.
They're coming for us now.
They're getting better.
Everything else they kill, but for some reason, Apple TV is tough. But everyone go out and get it so you can watch the show.
Please do. So episode 5, entitled Tan Lines. Woo. These episodes just keep getting better and better, too. And I'm realizing it more watching through it again for the second time now.
I mean, this is the episode where it jumps up to a whole other level and just kind of like this is the part where Ted Lasso becomes a real character and that this show is not the cartoon for sure that it was advertised as, because we find out what exactly makes Ted tick and what his most importantly, what his very real flaws are without them feeling like a sitcom invention. Because up to this point, we've known that there was something going on with his wife, and any other sitcom would probably just say that Ted cheated on it, on her, or she cheated on Ted, mm-hmm. or some other thing. Not the case. They make the most complicated, challenging choice, period. And it's so thrilling just from a writing standpoint to see it.
Yeah. It's an episode full of change, both in his job and his personal life, and for some other characters in the show too. It's a real turning point for the show. Before we dive into the main storyline of this episode, because I think it's going to just be a gigantic chunk of this episode of the podcast, maybe let's go through the plot of Jamie just refusing to grow up at this point.
Yeah, Jamie has some struggles in this episode. Early in the episode, we know that in episode 4, he and Keeley broke up. So then Keeley comes over to like drop off her keys. Mm-hmm. We see that Jamie already has like a new gal over. And then Keeley ultimately like thanks him for like reinforcing this idea of like, oh no, this is a terrible idea. Like, you're not a good fit. You're just not super accountable. You are very young and silly and no thank you. So that was kind of interesting to see his personal relationship reinforced as not a great idea. And then on the field, or were you going to say something?
To which Jamie genuinely says, "You're welcome." Whenever Keeley says, "Thank you for showing me just how awful a person you are," he goes, "You're welcome," and means it.
It doesn't faze him at all.
Like, not in the least.
To validate that he said thank you, because she's right. Like, "Really?
Yeah. Do you want to rethink that?" And he's like, "No, I'm doubling down." And I like his justification for already having somebody new there. He says, "What am I supposed to do? Shower by myself?"
So bizarre.
I do like sexy showers. Sexy showers are a fun time.
And I don't know if y'all noticed when they're at the house in that scene behind Keeley, like on the shelves, there's a bunch of toys just further like illustrating what a child this man is.
Yeah, I noticed the first piece of decoration that you see in Jamie's house whenever Keeley comes in through the front door is a faceless gold balloon dog.
Yeah.
Yep.
Unclear on what.
He probably just bought it because it's gold.
Yeah.
Well, that might actually be a pretty famous artist featured in the Whitney, but we don't have to go down that path. Sorry.
Oh no, Paul, what do you know? Tell us.
I literally looked this up when I watched the show and I forgot his name. But there's a very famous artist who's featured at the Whitney. He's known for his ridiculously over the top and simplistic, gaudy artwork.
Mm.
And he's also known for having some pornography in the Whitney, which is photographs of sexuality with his, at the time, significant other, and then being featured there. And so he is a character into and of himself. And when I saw that balloon dog, I went, oh, this fits Jamie so perfectly.
Oh, my goodness. I cannot believe that. That is what an exquisite detail.
Cheers to the production designer for that placement.
I just saw a dumb gold balloon dog and Paul's like, well, actually, it's representative of this entire mentality.
I know, we're just a bunch of nerds over here. Like, I don't know, balloons. Paul's like, excuse me.
Jeff Koons. And if you look at Jeff Koons' art, representative of Jeff Koons. And I'm sorry, I'll shut up now.
Yeah, how dare you add insight?
Jeff Koons. Shout out to Jeff Koons.
Oh. Jeff Koons, awesome. Come on the pod.
Whenever you're free.
Love to have you on. So then, yes, we go to practice or training. Sorry, it's training.
Training.
And Jamie's being a ball hog.
He's really just not nice. He's being a ball hog. And then he kind of like shit talks Sam, which I don't love. I don't think that's very fun. And then after like their next game, he like won't put his hands in to be like, go team, go. And basically it just says, well, guys, I'm doing all the hard work. Like, it is all about me. I'm scoring all the goals. I'm working the hardest. Like, I shouldn't have to. And it's crazy because I'm like, you are on a team. Like, that is like the whole premise of being on a team.
Right. I like at practice how Ted says something about Sam being open as the peanut butter on his counter. And then he just likes to leave peanut butter open. So anytime he walks by, he can just dip a finger in. Is that something anybody does?
Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Don't do that.
Let me ask you, what's disgusting about that? Are you worried about particles entering the peanut butter? Are you worried about dirty fingers?
I don't want dirty fingies. I never want dirty fingies. That's why I don't like to eat wings with the bone in them, because I don't want my fingies to get dirty. I would rather just put a fork in it. If I am eating anything that uses fingers, I want to make sure that it's like the way that I like my ladies, which is completely bone dry and just covered a little bit of flour.
And cold. I think we covered in a previous episode. You like them cold.
Yeah.
Bone cold, dry bitter, ladies. And dry. I like it.
Bone dry and cold. Okay.
And can you tell the listeners, are you single?
I'm outrageously single. Yes. How did you know?
I just want all the bone dry ladies to call in.
They're hard to find, bone dry and cold.
Paul, I'm so sorry. I think I cut you off. What were you going to say?
I'm not sure I want to say anything here. I was going to point a nerdy component. I play sports. I play competitive team sports. There's a moment in this that you were describing where Jamie's not passing the ball. Mm-hmm. And the coach says, we're going to keep doing this until you do it. And so this is a concept of, we're going to punish the team until you fall in with the team, right? Not punish so much as, we're going to keep trying this until you get it. And then his son shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And after he said, we're going to keep doing this until we get it right, he cancels immediately.
Yeah. And sprints across the field.
Which is a great comedy bit.
It was a great run.
Yeah. And
they call that back. They actually call that theme back from a sports perspective 3 times in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nate says that's a lot longer run than he thinks, to which Coach Beard just instantly goes, metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when Ted reaches them, he's like, I kind of thought you would meet me in the middle, but that's cool.
Which sort of is what's going on in their relationship,
yep,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's, oh gosh.
It's such a smart show.
It's so good.
Also, I do just want to say the peanut butter bit does have a payoff later. Like when he's in his little hotel room, at some point he does stick his finger in and eats the peanut butter, which is, I agree, it's just gross. Like, I don't want particles in there. I'm less concerned about the fingies. I'm equally concerned about the fingies. I don't want either. No particles, no fingies.
I'm more concerned about the fingies than the particles. Particles is fair game. We're going to get particles and things. It's just, it comes with living particles on the planet.
I think, I mean, this is controversial, obviously, but I think I'm okay with open peanut butter.
Oh, God.
So was Roy in the show, just as
Roy thought it was a good idea.
Yeah, that's true.
I kind of want to try, like, test having a jar of peanut butter and then, like, a glass of celery sticks.
Huh? There will be no test. I'll come up behind you and just go ahead and close it right up.
I'll throw away the lid.
Y'all can't see my head shaking as hard as it is right now.
Paul, what is your stance? Do you not want to get your fingies dirty? Are you against particles?
My former gig was Department of State Health, so I'm good with neither one of those things, given that I know that dust is mostly skin. So let's not.
So not only are you against fingies and particles, you're against just like buying store-bought peanut butter. And the only way that, like, you can only be secure in the fact that you make your own peanut butter, because then you know where everything is coming from.
I like Peter Pan.
Do you? That's your peanut butter of choice?
Sorry, I know.
It's a good peanut butter.
Oh, you got to get on Skippy. Skippy's all the way.
Skippy's all the way.
I cry when we have to eat Jif. I'm putting that out.
Same.
Everybody cries at Jif. So much skin. So there's a, Keely organized this press shoot, or this, I don't even, promo shoot, I guess, for a beer company that Jamie is doing. And there's just a couple things here that I thought were funny when Jamie's posing with the beer. He does a couple strange poses, one being the brunicorn. And then the Beerby, of course.
Beerby.
You're also, you got to mention the fact that Jamie specifically asks the photographers to make sure to get the tattoo on his arm. And then he says this tattoo is Chinese for arm. Which is such a, it is incredible just how well thought out the show is. And also, that is the dumbest joke ever. And it is exquisite.
I like that they left it in.
Yes, absolutely.
And are those tattoos new? Or do they mention that he just got them at some point? I don't remember them in previous episodes.
Paul?
I literally was wondering that. I don't know.
Yeah, especially the big one on his forearm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I remember it.
Paul, we like to do every episode, instead of running ads on the podcast, have the guest or any one of us really shout out a local or national charity organization or just group of people doing good things. Is there anybody, and I know you've kind of started your own great things. Do you want to shout out the Austin Free Hug Day or anything else?
The Ultimate Players League of Austin, known as Austin Ultimate, is a 501c3 charity that does good works promoting sports to middle school and high school students, much like you see with Ted Lasso in one of the earlier episodes when Trent comes through and does a little expose on him.
Wait, Trent Krim of The Independent?
Yes.
And Ted Lasso from America?
Yes, that Ted Lasso.
Fantastic. Si, you brought up when they were in the locker room before the game and the team does their all hands in and hoorah thing. Jamie's just busy taking selfies of himself. And when Ted approaches him on it, Jamie basically tells him he makes a deal with him. You keep up with the yeehaw bullshit and I'll just keep ignoring you. And then this is another moment when Ted's son comes in and interrupts.
I think we're going to see some really real moment of mentorship there.
Right.
And his son literally takes the wind out of his sails and Ted stops.
I wonder if are they saying something there with using the son to do this about six times this episode, or is it just a kind of a story transition technique that they're using?
I took it, if you're asking me, took it as his family is the number one most important thing in his life.
Mm.
Yeah, because he seems to drop everything, which is, you know, pretty standard, I guess, if you have a family to do that. But yeah, every time he's about to do something, a family member has a moment and he has to give his attention to that instead, which is interesting.
Si, I love that you have a family where the parents dropped everything.
I did not say that.
Because I'm thinking of Elf, which is the exact opposite premise of the entire story. But okay.
No, my family's fantastic, but like, no. Yeah,
if you're listening, you guys are great.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Shout out to Orlando, Florida.
There is another moment during the press conference that I think is important. It's I know it's the B plot, but it's one of my favorite plot lines in the entire show. It is that Keeley, incredibly young, is also very competent and very mentally healthy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
she has a moment with Miss Welton.
Yep. Where
Miss Welton offers her a job. Like, you put this press conference together, you got this endorsement deal. What if other folks want this? And Keeley's like, wait, is this because I was nice to you in the bathroom the other day? We can't do that. And she goes, men have been doing that.
Yeah.
She specifically says men have been giving jobs to each other in the bathroom for years.
Yes.
Which is true in all senses of the word.
Yeah.
Yes. But I thought it was a nice B plot, important moment.
She's very smart. She might be like, I don't know, between her and Ted for just the most emotionally intelligent characters in the show.
Yeah.
She's who I aspire to be.
She's smart, but not like a super smart, if that makes sense. That makes it sound like I'm putting Keely down, but it's she's not a genius at it. She's just really good at her job, which is a crack for me. It's not like she has some superpower. Like, she's just good at her job. And there's this other thing that she can do. And I wrote this line down because Rebecca asks her what she does again. And and this beautiful line, "I'm sort of famous for being almost famous."
Yeah.
What a gorgeous line. What a beautiful line.
And there's and we know so many people like that in the
world. Absolutely.
That were like, wait, why are they huge?
Because then that explains why she had her vodka commercial in episode 2, which John noticed. I guess it's Kafka.
Yes, I wrote that down too.
So now I'm like, okay, so it's not that she's necessarily like this high-end model. It's that she was famous for almost being famous, and thus you get to do endorsements and all of these things. Mm-hmm. So now it's all kind of coming together.
I mean, Jamie's squeeze at the beginning of the show was going, "Oh wow, I follow you on all your social accounts, Instagram, Snap."
Yeah.
And
she's an influencer.
She also posed one of the more philosophically intelligent moments in the show previously when she asks, "Panda or lion?"
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Which for me, that's where Jamie gets to say his fairly healthy line.
Yeah.
Why would I choose that?
I'm me.
Oh my
but
gosh.
there was a lot of significance in giving us perspective from the characters based on this silly little game. But then they pay that game off in resolution when you're on the photo shoot for the vodka.
Right.
Which is hilarious.
You see the sad panda.
Yes. And it was great.
Yeah. So she's not like a superstar, but she's famous enough to get first choice at the animal that in that commercial.
That's her status.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
So in the game, I don't remember who AFC Richmond is playing. They're playing somebody.
The letters are WTF. I know that.
Mm. Oh.
So in the game, Jamie's being a ball hog, of course, and he's playing well. He scores. And then I love how he's yelling on the field, pointing at his jersey and yelling "me."
Which is bananas.
I mean, that's also been the dialogue surrounding Jamie at this point. Like, the brilliant stroke is that the crowd and the announcers are with him. It would be really easy to just kind of make him the bad guy, clearly, and just everyone thinks that he is obnoxious. But like, Jamie is great at his job. Yeah. He is a great player. He is genuinely the one that is getting Richmond points, period.
Right.
And everyone is cheering for Jamie.
Go ahead, Si.
No, I was just going to say what's interesting about that, though, is I don't disagree, but in most arenas, physical and like in life, if you're being cheered on, usually the response is "thank you" or something like that. Like, it's just bananas to yell "me." Like,
yeah, or celebrating with your team.
Right. It's so funny. It's a real commitment to his character. I like that they did that.
And I love how the context of "me" changes when Ted pulls him from the game. He just questions "me."
Yeah.
That's true.
So does the player who's replacing him. He's like, "Yeah, did you get that number right?
Are you serious?" Yeah, so Ted pulls him from the game after his second goal, which ties the game, for being just super self-absorbed.
Well, yes. Go ahead, Kenny.
Oh, I was just going to make a dumb joke. Go on.
I want to hear that dumb joke.
Yeah, let's hear the joke.
What is Jamie's number? Number 9?
What is Jamie's number?
No, I'm just asking.
I don't know.
Because they swapped out 9 for 16, which is a shout out to all my widescreen fans. God. Yeah, worth it, right? So worth it.
Somewhere in the future, there is applause. I like how Ted has the idea to pull Jamie from the game, he has to run up the stands to ask Rebecca if that's okay first.
Yeah, and this is really the only acknowledgement of the sitcom-y Major League plot that is still running through the season.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they didn't really let that go. Yeah,
they just kind of throw a little splash in every episode.
Which is great. That's the right way to do it.
Right. So, yeah, Jamie's out of the game. He's upset.
Oh, go ahead.
You go.
I do just want to give a shout out to Roy Kent, because we are watching Roy kind of sustain his leadership role. So now in the last couple of episodes, he's been kind of defending Nate, calling teammates out and saying, you know, stop being a garbage teammate. And then in this episode, when Jamie has an opportunity to help Sam off the field, or like, you know, help pull him up, he rolls the man over, which is also crazy. Yeah. Roy calls him out for it and then ultimately ends up trying to fight him on the field. Like, Roy is definitely very committed to this idea of like, you got to shape up. Like, this is unacceptable behavior. So that was my only call on that.
There's a really good moment there too, where both the teammates for fighting get a yellow card. And that's a big deal, because that is not an American concept.
Yeah. That gets cheered.
Right.
You get a bonus.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think Roy is definitely stepping into the leadership role more and more. And they don't focus on it, but when he's talking to Keely, and we can talk about how Keely and Roy sparks are flying. But when he's talking to Keely, he's holding a Wrinkle in Time in his hands. Like, he's still losing it. Yeah, you only see it in one shot.
Oh, wow. Great eyes. I did not see that.
Yeah, so Roy, you know, criticizes Keely for putting up with Jamie, not knowing that she dumped him. So she rips it into him for doing that, for weighing in on her life. She puts him in his place and he apologizes. And she says she'll text him whenever she needs to make a decision to get his opinion on it. And of course she texts him to ask if she can go pee.
I love that bit, for the record.
She's so sassy. I just love her.
And I love how they don't linger on things. They don't hang on things. Like, that text is in frame for about 2.5 seconds.
Yeah.
So I don't even know if I caught that the first time I watched this episode. So yeah, and then at the end of the episode, Roy scares Keely in the parking lot and apologizes again for being a jerk. And they share a nice moment, and Roy leaves and Keely smiles. So there's definitely something building there between them.
Well, and the director put the scene right before that with Michelle leaving. And Ted saying, do you remember when we met in the parking lot? It was just the two of us.
Oh, my God.
Right. And so they set that moment as almost like the continuation of love from that couple as it departed.
Oh, my goodness. Next
couple.
Like a reincarnation.
Yes. Thank you.
Paul, you are a stellar guest. This is great stuff you're bringing to the table.
Are you free for the next 5 episodes?
My mouth is open. I'm like, what? This is brilliant. How did I not see this? I want to rewatch it again.
That's right. I was screaming that at you, but you were like, no, Kenny, don't ever invite any of your friends on. Don't do it.
I know, we tried.
Kenny, you're not supposed to tell people that.
We were going to have
you and I.
My friends are good.
Well, we'll have more of them on if they're like Paul.
Oh, that's very kind. I know a lot of Kenny's friends, and a lot of them are brilliant and amazing people that I love. So, yes, you should have them on.
Yeah. Smart, intelligent, well-spoken, outrageously attractive. All of them.
Sounds like you're describing Roy Kent.
Oh, my gosh.
That is Roy Kent.
Yeah.
He's shirtless this episode? Do we see him?
I think he was fully clothed.
But he does smile.
He does smile.
He does.
And he's like, he's really digging Ted's jokes and stuff now. I like it.
Yes.
Well, he's backing Ted up too, which is really, from a coaching standpoint, when one of the players jumps on board, it just adds credibility to what you're trying to enforce. And he's like, yeah, which is great with the joke with the peanut butter. That joke with the peanut butter when Roy weighs in.
He says, that's a great idea, to be fair.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the first domino has fallen, like they were saying in the first
and
episode.
Maybe a second domino, because when Ted does the big speech, and we'll get into the big speech, Roy's like, listen up, everybody. And then one of the players scooches over and invites Nate to sit. Isn't that nice? That would not have happened in episode one.
So no. Great.
So let's dive into the main storyline of this episode. Ted's family comes to visit him in London.
It's rough.
Yeah, it's a heavy one.
Like, initially, he and Michelle, his wife, who is played by?
Andrea Anders.
Yeah. Andrea Anders. In the first scene that they're in together, he says, I missed you. And then she, like, doesn't really say it back. Like, that's how we're kicking off them seeing each other, which is not great.
Well, first in the office, in the very beginning of the episode, Ted's in Rebecca's office opening up to her. saying that they've been having issues. They tried couples therapy, but they didn't like the other couple. He says that the therapist gave them a word to use, and whenever they say it, the other has to be honest, and that word is Oklahoma. And he also reveals that his wife flat out said that his constant optimism is just too much. So now we know, like, why Ted is giving her space.
Why Ted is actually 4,438 miles from home.
Exactly. So yeah, then Ted's wife and the son, they show up at practice. Ted sprints across the field to them. There's a moment here, and I mentioned it to Si when we were watching it tonight, when Ted is hugging his wife and then the kid says, group hug?
Oh, God.
That does not sound like the kid's voice. I feel like they couldn't get the kid back in for ADR, so they just had like a grown man do a voice.
Group hug. I'm like, group what?
Yeah, it was Brett Goldstein just doing that voice.
He probably was.
So strange.
So Ted, he takes the fam to a pub. He's giving them the tour of the neighborhood. And at the pub, like he and his wife, they have this awkward energy. Like neither of them are sure what they're supposed to be doing right now, basically.
She's breaking eye contact the entire time. She's making like small talk, which is so interesting to, I mean, we know that they're on the rocks, but to fly that far and to see your partner and to be like, do they wrap the fish in newspaper here? Like, yeah. It's as if they like hardly know each other. So that was.
Yeah. If you were a stranger in that pub, you'd think it was a first date.
Yeah.
Observing, which is heartbreaking on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And also she's trying as well. Again, just to keep comparing it to other sitcoms, because I guess that's my job here. I think another show would make her sharper, make her a bit more shrill, as opposed to just like, this is not something that either one of them want to be in. This is just the way that these feelings have unfolded, and she's trying to make it work.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're familiar with that actress, but when I saw the scene at the window, I literally looked at my wife and said, that's what she's really good at. She did that a lot in Better Off Ted. And there were scenes where she did that really well. And I was like, oh, somebody wanted her to do that moment. Cause she's a pretty decent actress.
Yeah.
And that was she's in one show. She's like a guest actress.
Yeah.
And they wanted her for that scene.
Yeah. Which is brilliant casting. She kills it.
Yeah.
That scene and the scene in the rain at the end are just
heartbreaking.
Masterclass.
Ooh, on a side note, did you guys see A Marriage Story?
No.
Yes.
Failed.
Oh, Paul, you got to get in there. If you're interested in a good cry, I mean, it is gut-wrenching. Gut-wrenching.
You say gunt-wrenching?
Yeah, I was wondering what that word was. Gunt. I wasn't going to ask. Isn't that a horrible expletive?
Gunt is.
Oh, my gunt. Oh.
It hit right in the gunt.
I got to look up that word before I edit this episode.
Can we just retitle the podcast to Gunt Wrenching?
Tan Lines and Gunt Wrenching.
Oh, no.
Sounds like a Kid Rock album.
I had to kill my mic.
So yeah, she lets Ted know that she's struggling to feel the way she felt about him in the beginning of the relationship.
The brilliant thing of he says Oklahoma, and then she really, really thinks about just not saying anything at all. Right. Like they've done a marvelous job of not letting there be too much silence and letting this relationship just kind of be awkward, pleasant. And then they really play that silence right here. Like she's going to betray this one thing that they have.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then she lets it fly.
Yeah. And of course he's devastated. When his reaction to it is great. When she leaves him in the room.
Yeah.
Just kind of like a little bit of defeat, a little bit of just having your mind blown.
But again, that moment was interrupted by their son.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful family moment. If you've ever raised kids, you know what I'm talking about. One of those moments that, yeah, honey, you can't go out without pants on. You look great. We're going to put some pants on you. And so it's just one of those realities that busts into this moment that disrupts where he's trying to go and what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a good thing. Like we find out each time, maybe it was good.
Yeah. It was kind of like a perfect punctuation on the moment each time. Yeah. Cause I feel like to go back a little bit when he was in the locker room, talking with Jamie, like it had where he was going had potential to be a real coaching situation, a moment for him to be a mentor, but it also could have gone into him losing his cool with Jamie finally.
Yeah.
And we want to know, and if you're writing this as a writer and you don't want to have to answer that question, or more importantly, you know the answer, but you don't want to give it away or reveal it yet. This is a beautiful moment where you disrupt this moment and you don't have to see Coach Lasso be the greatest coach, or actually he's not that good. You don't have to answer that. It comes out in his actions and through his play and how he leads the team, if he's a good coach or not, and not that moment of conversation with the perfect words to motivate Jamie.
Yep. Yeah, because it can feel overwrote.
Yes.
When that happens.
And also, I can't help but think, because this episode is about moving forward, that commitment to his family, and specifically that weakness that Ted says that he has, which is he's running to try and solve all of Michelle's problems. Mm-hmm. Is that holding him back from making a difference in Jamie's life and in the rest of the team's life at that point? Mm-hmm. Could it save Jamie from making decisions down the line?
I don't want to nitpick here, but I think he makes it explicit. He's not trying to solve all Michelle's problems, but when he did weigh in to try to solve it, and there was something else he said, and I can't remember what the or was, because I was like, oh, he's not over. Like it wasn't this crazy person who's always in somebody else's business.
Yeah.
Right.
And that validated that moment that, oh, he's not that crazy guy.
Yes.
Yeah. He's not overbearing.
Right. That's the word.
Yeah.
He's not a cartoon.
Right.
Yeah. And Kenny, I think that thought comes out perfectly in the speech, just to skip ahead a little bit. The speech in the locker room starts as this speech for the team, but kind of blends and mixes into his own realization of what he has to do with his relationship with his wife.
Being brave by embracing change.
Sometimes you have to let her go.
Right.
By her, I mean Lady Football. To Lady which Football. The rest of the players are like, oh, yeah, of course, Lady Football.
We were with you. Oh, man. There's a nice scene before that where Ted's in his office and Beard and Nate are counseling him, or trying to anyway. And he asks Higgins for his thoughts when Higgins comes in. And there's just a great like physical comedy bit where Higgins is just happy to be invited into this room with them. And he like tries to sit up on the shelf next to Nate, but abandons that. He's just
we didn't even talk about the fact that I think we meet Higgins' wife at the beginning of this episode.
Yes.
Like this is the first time.
Very first shot.
And it would be it'd be so easy to just make Higgins a schlub everywhere. But not only is he a good dad, he's a good husband, and everyone is on his side.
Yeah.
Which that's the harder choice in writing, because that's less, I guess, story opportunities for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, I won't spoil anything, but they do give her some solid direction. And she turns out to be three-dimensional as well.
Yes.
But it's not clear in that moment, because she is. She's being very supportive and says, hey, we wouldn't getting the second car fixed if it wasn't for you.
Right.
Which is just a really nice thing to say.
Yeah.
And also, I hope your boss gets heart disease.
Yeah. What a wild thing to say.
Such a strange, specific wish. Yeah, the show really doesn't have any wasted characters. Everybody is well-rounded. They're real human beings.
Except for Rupert.
Yes.
Well,
and I really did think they're going to circle that around. I really did.
Most definitely.
Can I point something out about that?
Of course.
There's a beautiful moment. At this point in the show, we've gotten to know the fans in the local pub that Ted visits.
Yes.
And there's really some funny scenes with those guys. But probably my favorite scene in the entire show, all 10 episodes, is this moment that I loved more than anything. They're all watching the game. They have pulled, Ted has pulled Jamie. You see back in the pub, they're watching the TV. And the one guy starts calling Ted names, really mean. And Paul, who's been the odd man out and every time, says, oh, but he's got a really nice family.
Right.
And the other guy says, damn it, Paul, don't humanize this.
Right.
I was like, that's my favorite part
of
how sports disappears. There's this beautiful game of sport where you're competing with your friends and you're trying to do your best and they're pushing you to do your best and you want to do your best. And that's what sport is. And then there's something else when fans get involved.
Yep.
And we dehumanize the other people and we become, it's about me or it's about us winning.
Right. It's that sense of ownership.
Yeah.
That can be toxic.
It's crazy that the fans are personified and that they actually interact with Ted to begin with. That beautiful moment whenever Ted is taking Michelle and his kid to the pub and they're like, oi, wanker. and then Ted goes, and then they go, lovely to meet you, Mrs. Lasso.
Yeah.
Nice save.
And I love that the crowd, they're always yelling, wanker, wanker. But then when they win the game, it's like a positive wanker, wanker, wanker. Yeah. Like, that's a nice shift.
I like that little theme of the same word, different meaning with that and Jamie yelling me.
They do that about 1,000 times in the show. And once they make you aware of it, it just seems to be everywhere.
Yeah.
But back to the scene with Higgins talking to Ted. Well, I mean, that's the first time that they're all grouped up for the show. And then a beautiful beat that just demonstrates this show in such a lovely micro expression. So Higgins is talking about how awful his life is. It's like they've got two cars, five kids. And a 20-year-old cat that is
very definitive. Yep.
That is going to die, and whenever it dies, it's going to just leave me an emotional train wreck.
Yeah.
And then at some point Higgins meows.
Yeah.
And then the brilliant stroke is Coach Beard laughs at that. Like, it's a genuine laugh. Like, again, a character being affected by someone else's behavior and genuinely thinking that it's funny comedies don't do that very often. And if they do it, it really feels forced, but it just works for me so well because it's just an odd behavior.
And it kind of validates Higgins as a person in that group.
Yeah.
Like, it's just such a welcoming cut.
There's a, did we already talk about this, where Higgins starts to sit down?
And yeah. Next to Nate.
Yeah. There's something powerful about that. And then them all validating this amazing life that he has led and how hard it's been and how they've worked through it. And he delivers this beautiful line: when you're with somebody who you love, it's all easy.
Yeah. Even the hard times are easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dropped a truth bomb, as Ted said.
Oh, that's right. Truth bomb. Call 911.
Yeah.
Or 999, apparently. Who would have thought?
And also, like, there's like been a subtle shift in Nate's demeanor too with Ted and Beard. And I think this episode, you really see him being comfortable with them.
Yeah.
It's so nice. It's so nice to see.
It's a nice show.
I want to give a shout out to... Oh, go ahead, Paul.
No, please.
Just a very quick shout out to Coach Beard, because he's really not in the episodes much, but like each scene that he is in really counts. And at the end of the episode, when he and Ted are just on the bench and like Ted said his goodbyes, obviously he's heartbroken. Beard knows what's going on, clearly. Like he knows why Ted has even taken the job. He knows that things are tough with Michelle. And as they're saying goodbye, here comes Beard with a pint ready to go. Like, let's just sit here. You know what I mean? Yep. He's not asking like, how'd it go? You right. know, like, just here's your pint.
I'm just going to sit here with you.
Yep.
Which is a callback to the opening scene on the airplane in the first episode.
Yeah.
When he says, this is crazy, right? Lasso says that to Beard and Beard goes, yes.
Yes, but I'm going with you.
But I'm with you.
Yeah.
And then they cheers the pints.
Oh, yeah.
Tap it down on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And take a sip. And this beautiful, beautiful micro expression that Sudeikis does as Ted, where as soon as that beer hits his lips, suddenly just all of the anxiety leaves just a bit. It is so subtle, and it is so much more human than you would see in other sitcoms.
Yeah. Now, interesting situation. Jason Sudeikis and Olivia Wilde recently broke up. So I guess they were together for 9 years. They've got two kids, and then they broke up earlier this year. And I always wonder, when you're an actor, like, are you taking things from your own life? Like, is a scene like this extremely painful, or is it cathartic, or is it nothing? That's what I was thinking as all of the stuff with Michelle was kind of unfolding.
I can speak to this, but not as a movie star and a famous person, but as a performer. I told a story tonight in Houston, and during that storytelling, part of the process, and it's my own personal true story, of course, but part of the process is to be there again, to bring the audience with me as I go, but to go back to that space and time and let that emotion kind of be present and be in it with it. And that you know, that's a hard thing to do, depending on what it is you're going back into. But as an actor, I've definitely done that on stage, where I have engaged that, because it's there and it's the thing you can put in that place and help you be in that moment and that emotion.
Yeah. And I guess it depends on the person, if whether it's cathartic or depressing or empty, like the Way Back movie with Ben Affleck. I wonder if that was cathartic or dangerous for him to do something like that.
Because he was addicted to basketball, right?
Yeah, coaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you went to rehab. You couldn't stop coaching.
Couldn't stop dribbling those balls. Yep.
Yeah.
But to speak to that point of accessing that truth, the facts, the masterstroke of this show, just for me, one of the big theses of this show is the fact that no one did anything wrong in the relationship. It just, we tried. You're not to blame. You're who you are. I'm who I am. we've tried. I have to let you go. No one mm-hmm. did anything wrong. Right. Like, it's not even that Ted is too positive. It's just she's trying to feel the way that she felt at the beginning. And the most tragic, most heartbreaking thing that they could have done is it's just, I don't know why. I don't know why I feel this way. It just is.
Yeah. And having it a relationship end with one person giving the other person permission to stop trying, I feel like it's so much more heartbreaking than just like a big argument.
Oh yeah.
In a slammed door.
Well, and Ted wanted to take responsibility. He didn't want to quit. And she had to remind him that he's not quitting. He's letting her go.
Right.
Yeah.
Which made me think of, he makes this great speech about, I there's nothing I would change. And all I could think of in that moment was the movie Arrival. So I know I'm a nerd. Mm. I appreciate that.
How dare you?
I know. But Amy Adams, what can I say?
I do love that movie.
I loved it.
It breaks my heart every time I watch it.
Paul, I beg of you, please find Marriage Story.
I will.
It's just this idea of like just life happening and people falling apart. And it's like, as a people, I think it's easier to watch a show or watch a moment that's can be boxed as this person was bad or this happened because of this. Like, it's just easier to take that in and then to watch just relationships, you know, really fall apart for no specific reason. It's just excruciating and yet wonderful. Like, yeah.
I can't think of another time just in pop culture where there was a breakup and it was just because. Like, it's just, it just is. It's gone. We love each other, but it's just, it's not. And no one is at fault. It's so blameless.
Mm-hmm. And it's like a hopeful sadness.
Yeah.
It's not just a bummer.
There's a line that you hear when you feel you were good enough for a part, but you didn't get it. And the expression is, you are a really beautiful shade of blue. You're a great shade of blue, and you're perfect shade of blue for you. The director was looking for purple.
Mm.
It's not about you.
See, this is why Paul is an award-winning storyteller, right?
I'm just sitting here soaking in your words.
I know. I feel like we're getting like free therapy. This is really a delight.
Oh, I'm scared. Don't listen to me for therapy. I don't know anything about therapy.
I'm actually not qualified for that. So right, please exactly. Don't.
You're a neuroscientist. Yeah. Ted's wife and son leave back to the airport. I like that when Ted and Michelle are talking, they just let the kid sit in the cab by himself, putting a lot of trust in that driver.
Yeah, the rest of this thing just becomes kind of like a Home Alone escapade.
But there is this recurring character with a soccer ball.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's just there all the time, and I'm praying she's foreshadowing. Praying.
Right. Yeah, we learned this episode. Her name is Shannon.
Yes.
We got to start keeping track of all of these background characters. Anyone that Ted talks to.
That's true.
I feel like anyone that Ted talks to comes back later.
Mm-hmm. It's like these little characters on the fringe are like the chairs in the stadium during the opening sequence. He's just turning them one by one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
That's good.
Wow. Yeah, because then the fan who usually hates him at the end when they're sitting on the bench, him and Beard, just walks by and tells him, good job.
Yeah.
Good job, Wanker.
Good job, Wanker. Yeah, because Wanker has a new meaning now.
It does.
And Ted says, keep an eye on us. We might be turning this thing around.
And I don't know about y'all, but the music has been pretty impressive for me to capturing these moments.
Was that another Mumford?
It was another Mumford.
Mm-hmm. Love, it was love nice. Guys.
Not one of the sons.
The dad.
Right.
Dad Mumford.
Dad Mumph.
Dad Mumph. Love that, DJ.
Oh, boy.
Are there any other little moments that we missed with some of like the, you know, CD plots and stuff?
The title.
Tan Lines, yeah. That's true.
That was a beautiful moment of the team is tied, which is a good thing, but they're all depressed. And the first thing Ted does when he walks in the locker room is tell a joke. And it's a long, heavy joke. And they're not sure if they're supposed to be laughing. And then they start laughing and they realize, oh, this is funny. And they're all relating to him. And then he starts talking about the game. And then he loses it with his wife. But that's the thing, right? But Tan Lines, I still shake my head. Of all the things that you would call this episode.
Right. Yeah, I wonder what the thought is in that.
That she was, I mean, I guess to date, she's like the most impactful thing in his life. Because he was saying that she was, when he met her, that was the first time he'd ever seen Tan Lines. So I guess she's just the most impactful thing. And now he's making a change.
Well, I think, wasn't he talking about his eighth grade teacher? And you were saying he transitioned to talking about his wife, which would make this really powerful if I had caught that. I didn't catch that. That makes this good. Thank you for making that clear, because I obviously missed that.
You know, I'm no expert. It's possible he was talking about his teacher, in which case I'm like, what? Why was your teacher showing Tan Lines?
That's because it was the teacher, because the teacher was bending over trying to help with the answers.
Okay.
But then he lost himself in the story and started thinking about his wife. And then he remembers he's coaching, gets back on the coaching thread, and then loses it with his wife again, which makes a lot more sense. So, Sai, I'm going with Sai. I'm voting Sai stays on the island.
Oh, is he saying something about maybe realizing for the first time that these people in these authoritative positions have lives outside of that? Like, she's this teacher, but she has Tan Lines. Like, she's out on the beach. And maybe that's what he's trying to convey to the players, to relate to them on the same level.
Maybe it's just a joke.
It might just be a joke. It could be a scar.
It could just be funny.
Who knows?
Did you laugh?
I did.
Oh, yeah. I just stopped laughing about that joke right before we recorded.
That's why you're out of breath.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. Hopefully you cut out all that 20 minutes of panting before we actually started talking.
Yeah, I wasn't recording yet.
Yeah, thank you.
You're safe. Hey, guess what? We're going to end the show with a fun little game. But first, let's talk about you. A couple things you could do. Please subscribe to our podcast and rate and review it if you can. If you would, that would help us out. That'd be awesome. You can also follow us on Twitter at LassoCast. And if you have any questions, you can email us lassocast@gmail.com. And if you're one of those people that has a lot of money laying around and you don't know what to do with it, you could send us some as a donation. LassoCast on Venmo. And if you leave a note, we'll read it on the show. But don't do that if you're not one of those people with lots of money just sitting around. Hold on to it. Spend it on more important things. Donate it to more important causes. But if you're rich, give us some, please. Paul, what do you have to plug?
Testifyatx.com, where you can submit a story and we will help you get it on stage, or the virtual stage at this point. But sometime next year, we hope to actually do it in person on stage with you sharing your stories with our audience. And we love doing that. Kate Caldwell, Angela Maldonado, and Lottie Luria just do a great job getting people comfortable and getting them on stage with their personal true stories. And we love doing that.
And can you say the name of that again? I'm sorry.
Sure. It's testifyatx.com.
Gotcha. Kenny, where can folks hear more from you?
You can hear me on my other podcasts, id4minutes.com. You could hear me doing Independence Day 4 minutes at a time. Paul, we need to get you on scheduled for ID4, man. If you've got any thoughts, period, about that. And then you can also catch me at, I guess, my home-based podcast, Shame Watch. A great first episode to listen to would be the Paul Normandin episode, where we talk about the Denzel Washington thriller, The Siege, which was...
I love that movie.
Thank you. Eerily prescient.
Yeah.
Kind of shockingly so.
It's a fun episode because you guys are so fun and funny. I had a blast on that show.
So let's play a game.
What's our game?
We're going to play a game. Imagine Dave Matthews singing the title of this game, but it's called The Space Between Ted and His Wife. Mm-hmm. We all know that London is 4,438 miles away from Kansas City, where Ted's wife and son live. I'm going to name a few other cities where Ted could have coached soccer to give his wife space, and y'all guess how far away he would have been from Kansas City in miles. Unreal.
Okay.
And the closest either way wins. It's not Price of Right rules.
Can I just check in, Kenny, or either of your parents cartographers? Are you going to cheat?
No, but my mom was a substitute teacher for a brief spell when I was in grade school.
Okay.
So basically the same.
Same thing.
And this is Cy, Kenny, and Paul playing. Okay, let's start out with an easy one.
Okay.
Ted was hired to coach Austin FC. How far is Austin, Texas from Kansas City, Missouri? Let's start with Cy. What's your guess?
Miles, not time.
Yeah, miles.
Well, shoot. 1,200 miles.
Okay. Paul?
788 miles.
Okay, Kenny?
720 miles.
Wow. Kenny, you are the closest.
Yes.
Off by 17 miles.
Whoa. Ooh.
Very impressive. Your mom's definitely coming through.
Hot dog.
All right. So Kenny's up 1-0 after the first question. Now let's say Ted was hired to coach the Nagoya Grampus in Nagoya, Japan. How far is that from Kansas City? Let's start with Kenny.
Oh, man. Japan?
Yes.
Oh boy. 4,820.
Okay, Paul?
Pacific Ocean is bigger than the Atlantic. Kansas City is more to the east than to west. I'm going to say 6,238 miles.
Okay, Cy?
Okay, given what I just learned from Paul, I'm going to say 7,032 miles.
I have to do some math real quick.
Ooh, we got something close then.
It's in between one of our numbers. Awesome.
Yeah. Cy, you are the closest.
Yeah.
The correct answer is 6,799 miles.
Ah, so I was close.
I was in the ballpark.
Yeah, you were very close. Let's say Ted was hired to coach the Lakeside Motors sponsored youth soccer team in Branson, Missouri. How far is that from Kansas City? Let's start with Paul.
I think 620 miles. I don't think it's that far.
620?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not far.
Kenny?
From Kansas City to Branson? I'm going to say 130 miles.
Okay.
I'm going to go with 320.
320.
That was good splitting the difference there, Cy. That was smart.
The correct answer, Branson, Missouri is 209 miles from Kansas City. Kenny, you are the closest this round.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a three-way tie. So I think this should be the last question, the tiebreaker.
Don't I have two and then...
Yeah, I don't have any points. I suck.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
Scorekeeping's not our strength here on the show. I've been before.
I think for the honesty, you should give Paul 2 points.
Okay.
But then I don't have two.
You know what? For Sai complaining about the amount of points that she has, I think you should take away 2 points.
We can each have 1.5 points. I think that's fair.
Okay. So we're going into the last round. Everybody is tied at 1.5 points.
That's right. A real nail biter.
Okay, so let's say Ted was hired to coach Union Douala in Douala, Cameroon on the continent of Africa. How far is that from Kansas City, Missouri?
Oh,
let's start with Sai.
Ooh. I'm going to say 8,643 miles.
Okay. Kenny?
3,200 miles.
And Paul?
5,438.
Do some quick calculations here.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
The distance from Douala, Cameroon to Kansas City, Missouri is 6,799 miles, which means, Paul, you are our winner. Congratulations, Paul.
Thank you.
You won a golden dog balloon.
Oh, I'll take that. I was thinking you were going to give me the gold key to Jamie's front door. I don't know if y'all noticed it was gold.
No, I didn't notice.
It's pretty sad.
Well, that was fun. That was the space between Ted and his wife. Thank you all for playing. Paul, thank you so much for coming on and talking Ted Lasso with us.
And it was truly, absolutely my pleasure. Seriously.
It was a joy to have you on.
Thank you. I really had a great time.
Did you, Paul?
I really did.
Paul?
Oklahoma. Oklahoma.
I want to tell you, I looked forward to this. I watched the episode again. I thought about coming on. I didn't want to disappoint Kenny at all. And I was a little anxious about meeting John and Sai. And I had texted with both of you, so I was a little anxious about, what has Kenny said? Can I live up to the things that Kenny said?
So Paul, you truly delivered. Don't you even worry about it.
Thank you.
And the anxiety was mutual.
It delivered nothing but disappointment. This is probably easily our worst episode, Paul. How dare you?
No, we're going to have you back on at some point.
I look forward to that.
Thanks for listening. LassoCast is produced by me, Saida, edited by John, and music is by MG Sound. Please come back next week where we will discuss episode 6 of Ted Lasso.